It's time now for Minds Over Matter, the Bay Area's favorite quiz show. Today, moderator Dana Rodriguez is joined by two panelists, technical editor Kira Pace and former music critic Joshua Cosman. And now, here's your host, Dana Rodriguez.
Thank you very much, Joanne. Welcome, everybody, to Minds Over Matter. Hope you're having a lovely Saturday morning. And we do hope you can give us a little bit of your time because Minds Over Matter is an audience participation quiz program. So, of course, what we are looking for is your participation. We would love to hear from you. We think it's great when you call with a question or answer. Those two numbers are area code 415-841-4134. Again, that's area code 415-841-4134. Or toll free. Yes, we have a toll free number. 866-798-8255. Again, that is 866-798-8255. We'll be taking questions on just about every subject. I will kind of leave that up to you a little bit, but this is a good time to call. Sometimes if you wait toward the end of the show, we don't get a chance to really talk to you. But if you call now, we will get you on 415-841-4134 or toll free 866-798-8255. We also want to give the option of emailing us. We prefer to talk to you, but if email is your preferred way, then that's okay. And that address is mindsovermatter1@gmail.com. So that is MINDSOVERMATTER1. That's the numeral one. MindsOverMatter1@gmail.com. Of course, we are on live stream at KALW.org. And since Joanne is here today and I'm doing her usual fine job, the podcast should be up at a reasonable amount of time after our program, and that will be at KALW.org and many, many other places. But start with KALW. I'm sure that would be appreciated. Okay, we're going to start with a round of introductions and then a round of questions. And here's the first. Kira Pace wonders if those quote-unquote special earrings are available in clip-on.
And Joshua Cosman is planning to make a very strong showing on today's program, but only because his friends at ABC News have given him the questions in advance.
There you go.
Yeah, it's the secret to success. Our moderator, Dana Rodriguez, doesn't think dogs or cats are in danger of being eaten, but he wouldn't enjoy being a Kentucky Fried Chicken in the same room as the Republican nominee.
All right. Thank you for that. And we'll begin the questioning with Kira Pace.
All right. So I have a lead-in question and then a list. So although the lead-in question is also a list, there have been four announcers for The Price is Right since its CBS revival in 1972. I would like you to name them.
Announcers, not on-air people, just announcers.
Correct.
Okay.
And I wouldn't say just announcers, but yes, the announcers for The Price is Right since the CBS revival in 1972. And while you're thinking about that, I will give you the name of a game show and, if necessary, a year span. And I want you to name the announcers there. So I have six game shows. And again, I would like the name of the announcer during the time spans I give you. The first is the New Hollywood Squares. That's from 1986 to 1989. The host was John Davidson, if that helps. Number two is Jeopardy from 1964 to 1974, when the host was Art Fleming. Number three is Double Dare, which ran from 86 to 93. The host there was Mark Summers. And number four is a game show from 1958 to 1962 called Who Do You Trust? It was on for longer than that, but I want the announcer from 1958 to 1962. Number five is What's My Line? I want the first announcer, 1950 to 1955. And finally, the announcer from Match Game 73 to 79. The announcer for Match Game 73 to 79. So again, four announcers for The Price is Right since the CBS revival in 72. I would like you to name them. And then the announcers for the New Hollywood Squares from 86 to 89, Jeopardy during the Art Fleming years, 64 to 74, Double Dare from 86 to 93, Who Do You Trust from 1958 to 62, What's My Line, the first announcer from 1950 to 1955, and Match Game, 73 to 79.
Go ahead.
I only know one announcer, and I don't know if he falls into any of these categories, but I'll take a shot. The Jeopardy announcer in the Art Fleming era, was that Johnny Gilbert?
It was not Johnny Gilbert.
Okay. Is Johnny Gilbert somewhere on this list?
He is not.
Really?
Yes.
Well, this is just blatant erasure then.
He has done just so many. It's true.
Fair enough. I don't know any of the others then.
Well,
Dana, take it.
Is any good, you know, since I watched Jeopardy growing up, basically, the Don Pardo was the announcer on the old Jeopardy.
This is true. During the Art Fleming years, Don Pardo was the announcer, mostly known for SNL.
New York then, and yeah, Don Pardo was a New York guy. And, of course, Who Do You Trust? That was Johnny Carson and Ed McMahon. So Ed McMahon was the announcer.
That is correct. Ed McMahon. Who Do You Trust?
And I know one of the people, I don't think he's there anymore. No, he's not there. On Price is Right, that was Johnny Olson.
He was the first. He is credited with the phrase, come on down.
Right. But I'm not sure. I might know one other, but I won't say anything right now. So, all right. So just go over quickly and
sure. So looking for the announcers for The Price is Right since it's CBS revival in 1972. Dana got the first one, which was Johnny Olson. Looking for the next three. Also, I've given you the names of some game shows and some year spans, and I want you to name the announcer. The ones we have left are the New Hollywood Squares from 1986 to 1989, Double Dare from 1986 to 1993, and that is the Nickelodeon Double Dare. I know that there were a couple of game shows called that. What's My Line from 1950 to 1955, and Match Game 73 through 79.
So you're asking on the more obscure ones, you're asking because the name is quite familiar, I'm assuming, not because they're obscure.
Well, it depends on what you consider obscure. Honestly, the ones I would know are probably the ones that you consider obscure. Okay. But these are all announcers who have done a lot of announcing. I mean, none of them, I think, Johnny Gilbert is a big name. Johnny Olson, a big name. They've done a lot of things. And I don't think that the filmographies of these other announcers are perhaps quite so extensive, but they are still announcer names, pretty well known.
And Josh, you go ahead, please.
Okay. I also have a list question because that's where we begin. So I have a list of titles, book, movie, other artworks, etc., all of whom follow the form the X and the Y, the something and the something. And I'm going to give you a description and ask you to tell me what the title is.
The Red and the Black.
So, for example, if I say a novel by Norman Mailer, you tell me it's The Naked and the Dead. Some of these are translated, but they're all quite strict. We're not doing Aquila and the Bee. We're not doing Sixpence, The Moon and Sixpence. It's always five words, the something and the something. All right? So here we go. A novel by Mark Twain. A film by Marcel Ophuls. A novel by Graham Greene. A Disney animated feature. There are actually two of these. A poem by Edward Lear. A Newbery Medal winning book. I thought there was only one of them, but a second one was awarded just this past year. An opera by Vincenzo Bellini, a novel by William Faulkner, a film by Noah Baumbach, a novel by Stendhal, and a poem by Lewis Carroll. All of these works of art have titles that are The X and The Y, The Something and The Something. So once again, real quick, a novel by Mark Twain, film by Marcel Ofuls, a novel by Graham Greene, Disney animated film, of which there are two, poem by Edward Lear, book that was awarded the Newbery Medal, which is, you know, for children's literature. There are two of these now. There didn't used to be. An opera by Vincenzo Bellini, novel by William Faulkner, a film by Noah Baumbach, a novel by Stendhal, and a poem by Lewis Carroll. So that's a long list. You can probably.
I'm sorry, you say they all have to be five words?
No, yeah. The titles are five words. Always five words. The first word is the third word is and, all the right. Fourth word is the second and fifth words are free.
I was doing a lot of writing, so I wasn't doing ton of thinking. So I can do two of these offhand right now.
I bet.
Okay. The Edward Lear poem is The Owl and the Pussycat.
Correct.
And the film by is The Squid and the Whale.
By Noah Baumbach. That is.
That's correct. What I said.
I know. I was just interpreting for you.
I appreciate it.
Give the woman two bells, one for each correct answer, please.
All right. The Bellini opera is the one.
I don't get bells anymore.
It should be easy, but wasn't there an opera, Bianca and Fernando, but
there is. Good for you, knowing your deep cut Bellini operas, but I want
that's definite, not the one. That's
no,
the one.
I want definite articles, man.
Yeah, right. Okay, that's why. All right, I'm sorry. If you could go down.
Yeah, it's a long list. Sorry. So these are works that have a title, The X and The Y, like The Naked and the Dead by Norman Mailer. There's a novel by Mark Twain, a film by Marcel Ofuls.
Well, that's the...
Yeah, interrupt as
the
we go.
The Sorrow and the Pity.
That is exactly what it is, The Sorrow and the Pity. A novel by Graham Greene, two different Disney animated film features, two Newbery Medal winning books for young adult authors, an opera by Vincenzo Bellini, novel by William Faulkner, novel by Stendhal, and a poem by Lewis Carroll.
Well, the Stendhal is The Red and the Black.
I was going to say, you said that already, The Red and the Black. Well done.
And then the Disney is The Lady and the Tramp, I would.
Command. It is not Lady in the
Tramp. Not Lady in the Tramp.
Because the title of that movie Lady in the Tramp. That's her name. She's Lady.
Oh, okay.
So there's no definite article there.
Huh. Okay.
All right.
May I ask if these are animated Disney features?
Or they are. That's the category. Animated Disney features.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, good morning. So yesterday was Friday the 13th, and I searched it, and believe it or not, it goes back all the way into ancient Egypt. Well, one of the cats, and that's why I have a black cat, as part of it. So, and also I have something to do with astronomy. Funny enough, of course. What language most stars in the sky named? What kind of language are they named? What names? I mean, is it Latin, Arabic?
From what language? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, from what language? What the stars?
Egypt. Arabic.
Arabic it is, yes. And so it is, and that actually, so why number 13 is unlucky? You know, when the Egyptian created the calendar 6,266 years ago, awful long time ago, consider number 13 is unlucky number. After the answer, because the time is...
I heard a specious story as a child that I've never quite believed, but that if you count on your hands, if you count on your fingers, 10, and then you count your feet as one each, you get 11, 12, and beyond that is the scary unknown.
Exactly. We're really pretty much close with Egyptian thought, because they created the year as 12 months. And after the 12 months, you will get evil. So very good. Okay, very quickly. So what I also asked you, what is the brightest star in the sky? And what do you remember what your answer was?
The sun.
The sun, perfect. Or what about the brightest star in the night sky? I'll give you the answer because time is short. Sirius, which also ancient Egyptian name for the star of Isis. Isis was a great Egyptian goddess of beauty, motherhood, and humanity. Okay, very quickly, last question. Actually, we are going to have to see a star dying very soon, this month in September. All right, so when big stars, much bigger than the sun, explode, they end up in different mode. One is a white dwarf, which like the sun would be. The second would be neutron star, and the worst one would be a black hole, as all of us. So that is the case with the T. Borealis, which is going to explode this month. It is going to be pretty much small. So next, one of our big neighbor is about to explode, and its Arabic name for the man, the old man. Actually, the name of that star in Arabic is strictly old man. You know which star it is? Very famous. There's movies that was made with that name.
Beetlejuice?
You're right, 100%. Yes, Beetlejuice is going to explode any time between now and 1,000 years from now or something. This thing is, when it explodes, it's going to outshine the sun. Now, as you know, when you go supernova, you bring what's called gamma ray burst, which is awful, very destructive radiation. Will we be destroyed by Betelgeuse? We don't know. We really don't know. Okay, but everybody look for that T. Borealis, which is going to explode this month. All of a sudden, you can see one star getting from nowhere. Very, very cool. Last question. The word "Semitic" refer to group of language, or race, or religion. What is it?
Sorry, I didn't quite catch that.
The word "Semitic," is it group of language, or religion, or race?
That's more race, isn't it?
No.
It's also
language. It's a group of language. Both Arabic, Hebrew, Aramaic, and many. I have many other questions to ask you, but you're beautiful. You have a great show. I'll give the time to other caller to call.
Thank you.
Again, happy third Friday the 13th. Thank you. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Gosh, you sounded so disappointed in me when I didn't get that. All right. Well, you're listening to Minds Over Matter. Hope you're enjoying the show. We're here every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. I should introduce our panel. That would be Kira Pace, technical editor Joshua Cosman, who writes about classical music and also does many crossword puzzles. You still do, Josh, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, there you go. What's your site for a crossword puzzle?
It's leftfieldcryptics.com. It's out of left field is our... as our brand, and we have a weekly crosswords by subscription through Patreon.
So you come up with a new one every week?
Yes.
Yeah. Right. And my name is Dana Rodriguez. I'm the moderator, and you're listening to us on 91.7 FM. That is KALW, your local public radio station. Okay, my turn here. Let me give you a couple of questions. To me, anyway, I don't know about to you, but to me, it's interesting that... we have two one-term presidents serving in a row here. Donald Trump and Joe Biden, who decided not to be the nominee. So that means that we have two presidents that served two full single terms, or each served one single term. And that has only happened once before in American history, where the president has served a full single term one after another. So in other words, what's the last time that two presidents served single terms, only single terms, full single terms, one after the other?
That's great. So you're very pointedly excluding the...
Yeah, nothing's with assassination or...
No, but I mean Grover Cleveland to...
Yeah, no, because he served
Harrison,
two terms.
Because he served two terms. Right, fair enough.
But there's one time that two presidents served a single term next to each other.
Is it...
It can't be a little bit more like not Ford Carter.
No, because no. Ford did not serve a whole term.
Oh, okay.
I want to say like Pierce and Buchanan.
That's absolutely right. Pierce and Buchanan.
Woo-hoo!
Very
nice
good.
Nice job.
Yes. Franklin Pierce, James Buchanan, they were both Democrats, by the way. Pierce 1853 to 1857, Buchanan 1857 to 1861. So yes, that's the only time that happened.
Wow.
Before. So
until Ed, did Zachary Taylor die in office?
Am he I did.
That? That's
he
what
did.
I thought. Okay.
So Fillmore, you did the rest of his term.
Yep. So,
all right, that's done. Okay, give you something else here. What major nation has a capital city with the lowest percentage of that country's population? What major nation has a capital city that contains the lowest percentage of that country's total population? Think about it.
I am thinking. I mean, it seems silly, but it seems like the United States is a possible candidate.
No. Washington's got about, it's over a million people. So
yeah, but I mean, the United States, I mean, it's a big denominator.
Right. It's true. Washington's actually smaller than a lot of capital cities. But
exactly. That's, you know.
But no.
But not right. Okay.
What about, I'm wondering if it's something that is a really populous country, and that, I don't know. What about India or Brazil?
Well, which one?
Okay, I'll go with India.
You're right. India, New Delhi, India, has 0.03% of the population.
Wow.
Yeah. Very good. Okay. Here's a list question. So I was looking down the list of the oldest cities in each U.S. state. A list of the oldest cities in each U.S. state. This is from Smithsonian. And there are six that are also the state capitals. So of the oldest cities in each U.S. state, six of them are state capitals. So which six are state capitals of the oldest cities in U.S. states? One answer, please. But I think I know which one you're going to answer.
Yeah, we're both going for the same one, I think.
Okay, then go ahead, Josh.
Well, go, no, you go.
Come on.
It's your thing. Do what you want to do.
Okay.
I can't
tell
you.
Then I will take
it to.
I will take Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Right.
Yep.
Santa Fe, New Mexico.
For sure.
Good. And that is found. That was founded in 1607. So again, on the list of the oldest cities in each state, six of those oldest cities are state capitals. Santa Fe, New Mexico is one. What are the others? And let's see, you answered my first two questions. I'll give you one more here. According to Business Insider, there are only three U.S. states that have no homegrown billionaires. According to Business Insider, there are only three U.S. states that have no homegrown billionaires. That doesn't mean they don't have a billionaire that has a vacation home there, but the states themselves do not have any homegrown billionaires. So which three U.S. states are those?
Hawaii
is not one.
How about Mississippi?
Nope. So what are the three U.S. states that have no homegrown billionaires? Only three.
Hard to know what qualities to look for in a state. I mean,
well, you can make money off of almost, you know, any industry that just,
right, exactly. I mean, you know, Delaware doesn't have many people, but they got billionaires for sure. Yeah, I don't know.
All right, think it over. So once more, according to Business Insider, there are only three U.S. states that have no home state billionaires. That means not a billionaire that comes in from out of state and has a vacation home there, but home state billionaires. And on the list of the oldest cities in each U.S. state, there are six that are also capital cities. Kira got Santa Fe, New Mexico.
So did Josh. I just said it.
All right. So you, everybody.
Thank you. That's very great.
What are the other ones on that list? And the two numbers to join us, area code 415-841-4134 or toll free 866-798-8255. Some of our emails. CM is wondering if the one of the Price is Right announcers, and this does sound familiar, is Rod Roddy.
He was number two from 1986 to 2003.
Good job. Let's see. And Chris is wondering, Match Game Gene Rayburn, but he's the host. He's not the announcer. Is he the announcer too?
That's correct. Gene Rayburn was the host. So looking for the announcer still. Okay.
All right.
And a clue for that one, we've already said his name.
Oh. Is that Johnny Gilbert?
Nope, not Johnny Gilbert.
All right. Okay. All right. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello?
Hi, you're on.
Oh, okay. So I can answer three of the X and the Y title questions.
I'm ready.
The novel by Mark Twain is The Prince and the Pauper.
That's correct.
The novel by William Faulkner is The Sound and the Fury.
Uh-huh.
And the poem by Lewis Carroll is The Walrus and the Carpenter.
Very well done. Bravo.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And the numbers to join us, area code 415-841-4134 or toll free 866-798-8255. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter. Are you there?
Hello?
Hi, you're on.
Hi, this is Jennifer from San Francisco.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. So how many planes are in the air at any given day, any given moment of a day, a domestic flight over the United States? And I also want to know how many planes within 24 hours, domestic flights, flying over the United States.
We don't have to get an exact number, do we?
Nope. No, it's an average. They're averages.
All right. Well, I can start the bidding for in the air at any given time over the U.S. I will start with 250.
Higher.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure it's in the thousands. About many thousands.
Really? Is it 1,000? I'll try.
No, it's more than that, I'm sure. From every airport in the United States.
But at any given moment.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah, all right. Don't know.
So is it higher or lower than 1,000, which was Josh's guess?
Oh, higher. Sorry, I didn't hear it.
Yeah, I'm going to go way up because I don't know. I would never know the exact number, but let's see. I'm going to go way up. I'm going to say around 7,000.
Close. A little too high. 4,500.
Oh, okay.
So how many planes in a 24 hours? Domestic flights in a day on average?
Well, I will again start the bidding. If 4,500 was the right answer there, but those flights do last a while, at least some of them. I will start with about 24,000.
Higher.
Should we go as high as 50,000?
In a day.
She can't hear me.
Yeah, Josh has guessed 50,000. Are we higher, too high there, or not high
enough?
Too high,
a little too high.
I'll say 35,000.
It's 45,000.
Okay.
And I have an answer, maybe, for one of these old cities that's a capital. How about Richmond, Virginia?
It is not Richmond, Virginia, no.
Well, all right, well, thanks very much.
Thank you for your question. Appreciate it. Bye-bye. And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. We're here every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Hope you're enjoying the show. We would love to hear from you. You can call us, area code 415-841-4134, or toll free 866-798-8255, or email us at mindsovermatter1, that's the numeral one, mindsovermatter1@gmail.com. And Kira, I think it's your turn.
Before you do, can I guess an ancient capital city for reason? Helena, Montana is whispering to me.
Nope.
Okay. What about Columbia, South Carolina?
Nope.
Huh, okay. All right. Let's do this one. 1956 marked the American premiere of what play, which took place in Miami's newly opened Coconut Grove Playhouse and starred what two actors in the primary roles? So 1956, the American premiere of what play, which took place at Miami's newly opened Coconut Grove Playhouse, and what two actors were in the primary roles?
So does it mean anything that it happened in Miami?
Yes, it means that it's totally hilarious that it took place in Miami.
Yes, that is correct. I went for the it made me laugh.
It's hilarious. So if you don't know this, I do. It's Beckett's play Waiting for Godot.
Oh.
And the two lead actors, one of the two lead actors was Burt Lahr.
And all I don't of that know who, is correct.
And yeah. I don't know who the other one was.
The only reason I asked for both, and Burt Lahr was really the one I was getting at, but I asked for both simply because there are two. And the other person is a name, not a name from my era.
I heard Burt Lahr was tremendous in that. I read that biography of him and said that he didn't quite understand the play, but he was very good in it.
As a clue for the other person, so Burt Lahr played Estragon. So as a clue for the person who played Vladimir, this person won a Tony Award and a Golden Globe for the same role. Mid-50s.
Kurt Kasnar was in the two. Who was the other one?
So again, Tony and Golden Globe. Not Oscar, but Golden Globe.
Yeah, right.
In the same role.
About that. Okay. Yeah. Keep it out. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello, Peter Seymour, Director of Research for Americans for Customary Weight and Measure. I had to say that because I have to correct something that was said there. Friday the 13th is bad luck because it's the day before Saturday the 14th, which is today. And I know I've discussed this in the past here. It has to do with ovulation. But anyway, it's my own research. Let's move on. Are you ready? Okay, what does Darth Vader have in common with the 15th Chief Justice? Because we did that last week. Remember that? The Chief Justice?
Are they people with known by three names, a middle wit of which is Earl?
You're right. The middle one is Earl.
Voice of Darth Vader.
Right, because it was Warren Earl Burger, who followed Earl Warren.
Earl, yeah.
That funny little twist. Oh, here. Now, I know you don't know much about sports, but let's, after these debates, it's like, I'm looking forward to the thriller in Manila. What am I referring to?
Prize fight.
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah, it's the prize fight between Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier?
Yeah, but what was the thriller in Manila?
That was the
prize fight between Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, but what's the context?
I don't know what you're asking.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
Okay, in 1971, they had a fight. Frazier beats Ali in Madison Square Garden. And then in 1974, rematch. Ali beats Frazier. Right? And then you need the one to settle it. Which is it going to be? And that's why they did the thriller in Manila to answer once and for all who's the best. And of course, Ali wins. So that's what I'm saying. It's like like we need a third debate just because we need a thriller in Manila.
Mm.
You know, let's answer the question. We're gonna put an end to all this. We need a, and we're not gonna do in a 15th round decision. It was brutal because they threw in the towel. What's his name? You know what I mean? Frazier's coach, whatever, threw in the towel because he couldn't see anymore. He was so bruised. Too many hits to the head. But
that'll
anyway,
happen.
Huh?
Yeah, that'll happen.
That happened, you know, and there was something in the news about that. The human brain is very delicate. It's not meant to be battered around like that, either on the football field or you know, in boxing matches.
Yeah. Right. Thank you very much. Appreciate
okay,
it.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. We're here every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Hope you're enjoying the show. We would love to hear from you, of course. Those two numbers are area code 415-841-4134 or toll-free 866-798-8255. And we are a little past halfway, so let's repeat any questions that have not been answered yet. Kara, we'll start with you.
All right. I was looking for the four announcers for The Price is Right, since it's CBS Revival in 1972. We've got the first two, which were Johnny Olson and Rod Roddy, looking for the later two. Also, I've given you the names of some game shows and a year span as necessary. I'm looking for the announcers, not the hosts, but the announcers. And the ones that we have left are the New Hollywood Squares from 86 to 89. The host there was John Davidson, who was the announcer. Double Dare from 1986 to 1993, where the host was Mark Summers, who was the announcer there. What's My Line, the first announcer who announced from 1950 to 55, and Match Game 73 through 79. Also, I asked about the American premiere of Waiting for Godot, which took place in 1956 at the Miami Coconut Grove Playhouse, and Joshua knew that that Burt Lahr played Estragon, who played Vladimir. And as a hint, I gave that this person won a Tony and a Golden Globe for the same role in the mid-1950s.
I'm just looking for titles that have the form the X and the Y, as in Norman Mailer's The Naked and the Dead. Several of them have been gotten, but the ones that are outstanding are a novel by Graham Greene, two Disney animated feature films, two young adult books that have won the Newbery Medal, and an opera by Vincenzo Bellini.
All right. And according to Business Insider, there are only three U.S. states that have no home state billionaires. That doesn't mean an outside billionaire who has a vacation home. That means home state billionaires. What are those three U.S. states? And on the list of the oldest cities in each U.S. state, the single oldest city in each U.S. state, there are six that happen to be state capitals, according to Smithsonian. And so far we have New Mexico, which is capital city, which is Santa Fe, founded in 1607. What are the other cities on that list? That's all I have.
What about Charleston, West Virginia, for that list?
Yeah, West Virginia is not on the list, no.
Okay.
No West Virginia. And let's see.
Oh, what about Providence, Rhode Island?
Providence, Rhode Island is one of them, yes.
Okay.
Good. Founded in 1636.
Sure.
All right, and it's your turn, Josh.
Okay, so tonight the San Francisco Opera is presenting the American premiere of Poul Ruder's opera, The Handmaid's Tale, based on Margaret Atwood's horrifying dystopian novel, which I finally read. The title, of course, is a deliberate homage to the Canterbury Tales, so I thought it would be time for a Canterbury Tales question. Of the characters in the Canterbury Tales who tell stories, there are three whose descriptor is the name of an Oscar-nominated actor. So, for example, if Sarah, wife of Bath, had ever won an Oscar, had ever been nominated for an Oscar, she would be one, but she wasn't, and she doesn't exist. But there are three Oscar-nominated actors who have a name that matches one of the characters who tells a story in the Canterbury Tales. I will tell you, these are all nominations for Best Supporting Actor or Actresses. Two for Best Supporting Actress, one for Best Supporting Actor. None of them won. You'll have to dig deep into your knowledge of either Chaucer or unsuccessful Best Supporting Actor nominees.
What about Marilyn Monroe? Was she ever unsuccessfully as the Miller's wife?
Oh, that's good.
That is really good. Unfortunately, I don't think there's a Miller's Wife's Tale.
Oh, isn't it? Oh, shoot. Okay, but, no, it was just the Miller's Wife.
That is very witty, and you're not far from a correct answer.
So, okay, I'm sorry. I'm just a little.
Okay.
So, just what you want here, as far as
I want actors who were Oscar nominated,
right?
Who have a name that matches something in one of the characters in the who tells a tale in the Canterbury Tales. So, for example, if Christopher Reeve had ever won been nominated for an Oscar, he would be a correct answer because the Reeves tale is one of the tales in the Canterbury Tales.
Okay.
All right.
Huh. I can think of characters, but they're always called like the host, the parson.
Yes, that's exactly what we're looking for. We're not looking for their names. We don't know their names. Where I'm saying the designation that is used by Chaucer as those characters. So, for example, the Parson's Tale. Well, Estelle Parsons is almost right, but she's got the extra S. So I left her off the list.
Okay.
All right.
And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds for Matter.
Hi, it's Stefan from Noe Valley.
Hi, Stefan.
I believe I have some answers. I'm not quite sure. Wasn't Johnny Olson the announcer for Match Game 73-79?
He was. Nice job.
And wasn't he also for What's My Line?
He wasn't the first announcer in 1950 to 1955. I'm not sure if he worked on What's My Line at all. Actually, I think he was the last one, wasn't he?
Yeah, I don't know. I thought I heard his name being announced at the end of the credits on repeats on YouTube. How about Idaho for a state without a homegrown billionaire?
No, not Idaho.
Okay. All right. I have a list of a few fictional items from the original Star Trek series. I don't know if any of you are into Star Trek trivia, the original series only, nothing later. These are very common. Well, for anyone who's seen the show a lot, they would know some of these names of these devices that are fictional devices or things that are important in an episode. So I have Agonizer, Atavicron, Tricorder, Hypo, Corbomite, Fizbin, and Tranya.
I can only do two of these.
I know plenty of people that would get them all, but...
I'm strictly next gen, I'm afraid.
What's the question about these? Too late. What are they?
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
I assume
just more care answer. Could you just go down the list once more, please? Thank you, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so there's Agonizer. Agonizer is a little obscure. It's only one episode. Atavicron, same thing there. The name Atavicron, actually, if you're good at word origins, you might figure it out. The word atavistic is, I think, the word that they might have thought for naming this device called the Atavicron. Tricorder, this was in all the show's episodes. Hypo, Corbomite, classic plot device. Fizbin, the humorous plot device, and Tranya.
All right. The only one, I'm sure everybody knows more than I do, but the only one that sounds, I kind of remember, is the Agonizer. And that was something they wore, I don't know, was it on their belt or someplace? It inflicted pain. I don't know how you did it, but it made you, if you did something wrong, they would use the agonizer on you. Is that kind of right?
Yes, that's correct. My understanding is that was only in one episode, kind of an alternate universe of the Star Trek universe, where the crew had to wear these things to, it's like self-discipline or discipline. That's pretty obscure, though. It's only one episode. The other ones, a lot of the other ones are like in all the shows. They're always mentioned, tricorder, hypo, for instance.
Yeah, right. The agonizer is the one with evil Spock, right?
Yes. Yes.
Sweet. Right. Okay. So the tricorder, that's basically their device that looks kind of like an iPhone. I think the iPhone was based on the tricorder, right? But it's the thing they always pull out and they scan the area. It's basically their do-all. It is a Swiss Army knife of the future. But they can communicate on it. They can scan areas, and that's the tricorder and everything. And then the hypo is basically, it's like a hypodermic needle, but it's the thing that McCoy would always put up to their necks to give them inoculations and whatnot.
Right, it's a hypo spray, basically. It's a needleless injector of whatever they need to inject.
And I'm irritated with myself because Fizbin sounds familiar, but I have not seen most of the original series. So I don't remember, and I don't know the other ones.
Right. And Joshua,
does that have anything to do with like a book? Is that sort of like Picard uses later, and it's basically an iPad?
No.
A Tavacron sounds like it might be a time travel device.
Oh.
Yes, you are correct. They jump through it, and then they're somewhere in the path of Earth history or the planet's history. That's good.
Possible future opera.
Yeah, so that leaves the last three, which any real fan would know. Corbamite is a substance that Kirk invents at the last minute to foil an enemy. And Fizbin is a crazy card game whose rules are so complex that it confuses the idiots that are trying to hold them captive. And Tranya is a beverage, which appears at the end of one of the episodes, an early episode. And it's just sort of it's a very memorable scene. That's why people sort of remember this drink, because it's such an iconic moment in the scene at the end of the episode.
Kirk invented this element at the last minute to save everybody on Enterprise. Is that correct? Kirk invented this element. You said at the last minute to save everybody on the Enterprise.
Oh, the Corbamite. Not at the last minute, but it is something that he invents to foil. It's kind of a game of poker he's playing.
Okay.
Yeah, right. He's bluffing the enemy. And Spock asks him, after he makes his announcement, he says, "Is that chess?" And he says, "No, poker."
Okay. Well, thank you, Stephen. That was an interesting question.
All right, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. We're here every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Feel free to give us a call. Area code 415-841-4134 with a question or answer, or toll free 866-798-8255. I have some emails here. Chris is wondering the X and the Y question. Is that the Princess and the Frog?
That is one of the two Disney animated features. Well done.
Zach is wondering match game. He has Gary Olson, but he probably means Johnny Olson.
Yes.
And he's wondering, I'm sorry, yes?
That Johnny Olson was correct.
Okay. And he's saying this with a question mark, and he says the Beauty and the Beast, though I think it's just
Beauty and the Beast.
All right. Paul is wondering Old City Capitals, Philadelphia and Charleston, either one. Let's see. And I guess for title with articles, I guess that's The Naked and the Dead. And I didn't have the Graham Greene novel. Did you get the Graham Greene novel?
No one has said the Graham Greene novel.
Okay. All right. Okay. And what time is it here? All right. So I'm going to give you two films in which real U.S. presidents, I mean presidents, not who are not in the film, but they're depicted in the films. So I'm going to give you two films in which real U.S. presidents were depicted. Tell me which presidents they are. One is The Prisoner of Shark Island, and the other is The Wind and the Lion. What two real U.S. presidents were depicted in those films?
Not much to go on, unless you know those movies. The Wind and the Lion. How about Teddy Roosevelt?
That is correct. Sean Connery played the...
That's right. That's right.
With a Scottish accent, played the Arab leader, the Moroccan Arab leader. And Brian Keith played Theodore Roosevelt. Very good. So the other
Never
one...
Never heard of Shark Island.
Prisoner. It's quite a good film, actually. The Prisoner of Shark Island. Who? What president is depicted in that? And, all right, let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Yeah, hi, this is Greg in Alameda.
Hi, Greg.
Excuse me. The states with no homegrown billionaires, so do you mean that the billionaire was born in the state?
Means they were, I can't say for sure they were born in the state, but they made their career in the state and money in the state.
Okay. So this could be wildly wrong or right. I'm going to say Alaska.
Alaska is one of them, yes. Very good.
Okay. All right. And then, you know, somebody got Johnny Olsen for the match game 73-79. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to share, if anybody's interested, when I was recovering from surgery, I watched every single season. And so to save people time, the best season is match game 74.
Thank you.
who was on 74? Like, who were some of the... I mean, Richard Dawson was on.
Yeah, it was the classic. Yeah. It was Richard Dawson, Betty White, Brett Summers, Charles Nelson Reilly. And the reason why I say that season is the best is they had, you know, the two spots that they usually had, like, rotating guest stars. They had a lot of really sort of up-and-coming TV people in that year. And then also the, it was just more lighthearted. I think maybe the first year was rough. Then the second year, which was 74, they got into the groove. And it was, you know, very jovial and friendly. It just, in my opinion, 74 was the best year.
All right. Thank you very much, Greg.
All right. Bye.
Bye. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello.
Hi, you're on.
Nice to speak to all three of you. Thank you for having this Saturday morning diversion. Let's go for a trifecta. Shadow Stevens was on Hollywood Squares. Randy West, although short-lived, certainly was on The Price is Right. And the singularly named Harvey was the announcer on Double Dare, hosted by Mark Summers. So I'll wait for that bell.
Yeah, well, first of all, God bless you for getting the Gen X stuff. I appreciate that. Harvey, the announcer, is correct for Double Dare, and Shadow Stevens was indeed New Hollywood Squares. Who did you say for Price is Right?
You will look it up, and you will discover, or I can give you his phone number. You can call him directly. But Randy West, actually, when Johnny Olsen passed, Randy was one of the guys given a trial time. He didn't last very long, but he was definitely on there.
Okay,
later went
I
on
believe
to
it.
Do Supermarket Sweep, among other shows, too.
Sweet. Right. Well, I don't have him on the list because he wasn't listed as one of the four official announcers, so I guess probably because it was a trial period, but I would still give you a bell.
I'll get better than that. Thank you. All right, okay. Now, speaking of Harvey, he was the announcer on Double Dare, hosted, as you said, by Mark Summers, who hosted the only game show ever produced by DreamWorks.
Huh.
And that is the question for the three of you to ponder. But if I may, I have something else, which is a different form of question. It's something my wife and I have been musing about today, and I'd like you and your very, very bright audience to see if they can discern the answer, because, frankly, I don't know the answer. Follow this logic. Third in line to succession of the presidency of the United States is the Speaker of the House. Someone can run for Congress and not be a natural-born U.S. citizen, but only be a naturalized citizen, all right? That person, due to unfortunate circumstances, which we never want to see, becomes the president. Is that person entitled to run again for a second term as president, even though that person was not a natural-born U.S. citizen? And that's
sure.
my question. For
I'm not sure that they
here,
become the
which,
president.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think they even succeed.
No, I don't.
There was a hilarious comic strip in the National Lampoon sometime in the 70s about an incredibly ambitious Secretary of Transportation who tries to persuade the president to appoint non-native citizens to all of the cabinet positions above him on the list, so that ostensibly so that they're not threats to his power, but in fact so that when the president dies, he shoots up from like number 12 on the list.
So it is your contention or belief, I won't say contention, but belief, that even though that person is the Speaker of the House, if that person is not a natural-born U.S. citizen, he or she cannot become the president?
I think they would just... That's our belief, yeah.
That's your belief, but someone wiser than we will call in and let us know. My wonderful Moose and I are very happy to listen to you, and we thank you very much for this Saturday morning fun.
Thank you so much. Appreciate
right,
it.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. I hope you know what to take another call here. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, is it me?
It is you.
Oh, hi. This is Jean from San Francisco. I have the other Disney movie.
Okay,
tell me.
It's the Fox and the Hound.
That is correct. Well done.
Thank
Good
you.
Job.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
All right. Thank you very much. And all right, I guess we should sort of wrap it up now. Kira, what do you have?
All right. The next two announcers for The Price is Right were Rich Fields from 2004 to 2010, and then George Gray, who does it now. The only announcer I did not get was the first announcer of What's My Line, and that was Lee Vines. And finally, the person who was Vladimir to Bert Lars Estragon, Tony and Golden Globe nominee, I think winner of at least one of them, Tom Ewell.
Tom Ewell. Oh, he was in The 7 Year Itch. That's
correct.
What he
Oh, that guy. Right, right, right.
All right.
All right. Titles of the form, The X and the Y, novel by Graham Greene. Did you want to go with that one?
Oh,
I thought you were kind of eyeing it.
I'm sure I would get it.
It's The Power and the Glory.
All right.
Newbery Medal winning book is The Hero and the Crown by Robin McKinley. Supposedly a good one. This year it went to a book by our own local hero, Dave Eggers, called The Eyes and the Impossible. The Bellini opera is based on Romeo and Juliet, and it's called The Montagues and The Capulets.
Hmm.
Matches between the Canterbury Tales and Oscar-nominated actors doesn't seem to have resonated with anybody. Jason Miller is one that you know. Come on, Kira. Jason Miller was nominated for playing Father Damien in The Exorcist, and he's a Miller. Vivian Merchant from Alfie, and Shirley Knight, who was nominated twice for The Dark at the Top of the Stairs and Sweet Bird of Youth.
All right. That was a tough question.
And it was tough.
According to Business Insider, there are three U.S. states that have no homegrown billionaires. They are Alaska, Delaware, and West Virginia. Alaska, Delaware, and what? Did somebody ask West Virginia?
Somebody said West Virginia.
I'm sorry.
It was an answer to the state capital question.
Oh, okay.
That's,
all right.
That's, yeah.
The list of the oldest cities in the U.S., there are six that are also state capitals. Maryland, Annapolis, 1649. Santa Fe, New Mexico. Fort Nassau, now known as Albany, New York. Providence, Rhode Island. Fort Pier, now just Pier, South Dakota, and Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Oh, should have gotten
that. If we didn't get your call, I do apologize. Thanks to our panel today. That would be Kira Pace, technical editor, Joshua Cosman, who writes about classical music and devises crossword puzzles. I've been your moderator, Dana Rodriguez. Thanks to Joanne Marr for handling the board and phones. And above all, our thanks to you out there for taking the time to tune in and call in. We appreciate it very much. And we do hope you will come back next Saturday morning at 10 and join us. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week.